Andy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram this last hour. Sam, how do people text or call in?
844-967-2789, and I'll screen your call or text.
So, in fact, speaking of call-ins, I guess, you know, we frequently have callers, CJ, Gary, we have Dave, who are who come at this from a more conservative angle than possibly Earl and I do. And I'm wondering, I sort of challenge them to call in on this issue that we're now talking about, which is essentially the birthright of children to be born into circumstances which would take care of their health and which would take care of their education and welfare, and how it is that conservatives propose to take care of those issues. You know, in the developed countries of the world, other developed countries of the world, children are born into a system in which they are assured of health care, they're assured of child daycare. They're, in most countries, their mothers or fathers are assured of maternity or paternity leave so that they are cared for by their parents for a period of time in their early childhood. And none of these things are provided and assured in America for children. And I'm curious what the conservative view of that is. I've never really heard a rationale for why it is that we in our country have concluded that we would not provide our children with all of that same kind of support, while at the same time, we have probably the most strident argument going on about whether mothers should be required to, or women who become pregnant should be required to bear that pregnancy all the way through the gestation period to childbirth, and the government to make that decision for them. And so I don't know whether we've got listeners who want to call in on that issue, but I think that it's hard to have the discussion about what it is we should be doing without at least somebody trying to provide explanation for why it is that we do what we do, which is to basically ignore those interests. We've provided Medicare for the elderly and elderly starting at age 62 now. And that Medicare is there because we realize that medical aid and medical support and medical care for people over 62 is a necessity. Well, medical care is a necessity for everyone of every age, but it's a particular necessity for the young, for those once from the time of birth onward. And yet we don't have a system other than for the people who qualify because of poverty for Medicaid, but we have the whole middle income group for whom this is not assured and for whom we've basically said, look, we hope you're lucky enough to be born into a family in which the family income is sufficient to support medical insurance, because otherwise you aren't going to receive the medical care you need as a child. And we hope you're born into a family that has the wherewithal to have child daycare for you, because otherwise you're going to be a latchkey child who is not going to receive the daycare you need. And why have we come to this point? You know, on a show several weeks ago, we did some simple math to figure out how much a family would have to earn in today's circumstance in America to be able to afford to buy healthcare insurance and to provide daycare for their young children. And we realized that it's well over the median income in the United States for families of $75 million. It's probably over $75,000. And it's probably over $100,000 that a family would have to earn to actually be able to afford to provide both daycare, good housing, and health care to their children and to their families. And why is it that we as a government haven't decided that we should provide health care to, for instance, children from age 0 to 21 when they're otherwise not able to provide it for themselves and have to rely on their family and their family's circumstance to figure out whether they get the health care they need? And if we're going to provide health care to people who are ages 62 and older, and if it isn't obvious that we should be providing healthcare or assuring it to people age 0 to 21, then why aren't we simply just biting the bullet like other countries have, every other country has just about, and assuring that we have health care for everyone from age zero to their death. And it's a mystery to me. How did we evolve in America to this position of having a society which views itself as exceptional, but we don't provide health care from the beginning to the end of life? And similarly, education. Sam, you have student loans that you have to pay back? You do, don't you?
Oh, yes. It's looming over my head as we speak.
Well, you know, what's clear from the evidence and from just looking backwards in time at the evidence of what happened to tuitions and what happened to the student loan rate is that as tuitions have gone up far faster than inflation, it has happened at the same time that student loans flew up in scale. I mean, we're at $1.7 trillion of student loans, and most of those loans have been incurred in the last 25 years. And so that's a stupendous rate of student loans being incurred. And lots of it has been because our state legislatures across the country have decided to withdraw tax-supported funding from public universities. The price of going to a public university in this country is now materially higher than it was 30 years ago, materially higher. And the reason for that is that we're asking young people to incur personal loans to replace the taxpayer subsidy that used to exist for public universities in this country. So is the forgiveness of a student loan a handout? No, maybe it's just a recognition that those student loans are replacing what used to be tax-supported, the public recognition of the need to support public education through college so that our economy and our society would be supported by all these people with a higher education. All right, I take it a student loan forgiveness for you, Sam, would make quite a difference.
I couldn't even imagine what that would do for my savings. You know, luckily have been able to, President Biden has pushed back that requirement start time quite a bit for me. So I've been able to push it back quite a bit. But, you know, once that starts hitting, you know, I'll have to prioritize rent and food over fun to make those student payment loans. And hey, that's fine. I wanted to be educated. I did. But, you know, I don't understand a society that wants to have, I'm not that you're not smart when you go to or when you don't go to college, but I think a society would want a better educated society in general just to do better. So when people ask me my college experience and all of my loans and everything, and they ask me if I would do it again, my honest answer is no. I would not do it again. I would probably jump into the workforce and set myself up for a better situation than I'm currently in.
So, you know, one of the arguments against the student loan forgiveness currently being leveled is that it's inflationary. And so my question is, with respect to inflation, if a student loan is forgiven, how do we expect, first of all, how do we expect that money would have been spent or would be spent if the student loan is not being paid back? And I think for most of these students, they're experiencing hardships as the result of paying off their student loan. And what we're basically saying when we argue that forgiving a student loan will be inflationary is that we want to make sure that these people do experience hardships. And we don't want them to be able to, for instance, afford to pay somewhat more rent so they can live in a better environment. Do we have a caller?
We have Jack from Merrimack calling.
Jack, how are you?
Just pizza cheating, as my granny used to say. Anyway, I think I have the answer to a number of those questions, which is, why don't we provide daycare? Why don't we provide education, et cetera? And the answer is that if you're rich, you're never rich enough. The billionaires, I'm a retired teacher, and the billionaires pay taxes. The top 25, according to what I've read, pay taxes about a quarter of the rate that I pay as a retired teacher. That to me is an outrage. And when the universal college education was proposed by Bernie Sanders, His plan would have cost about $40 billion. At the same time, when our military budget was put into place, which, by the way, I'm sure you realize, actually has half of all of the discretionary spending in this country. It's just spent on war, excuse me, military, not war, of course. In any case, he proposed universal college or schooling, at least above high school. And it would have cost, I think he estimated, $40 billion. And that particular year, the military budget was boosted by $60 billion. That the Pentagon did not even ask for. So we've got the money. You know, it's available. You just have to tax people appropriately, not just the middle class and the lower class, but you have to tax the rich, you have to tax the big corporations, and you got to stop giving away money to big corporations as well.
That's the answer, I guess, for why it is that people would decide not to spend money on anything at all in the way of social programs. But how do you think an American political system and a social system can justify the notion that we would bring children into this world and then withhold from them the necessities that exist to make their life their life potential what it could be and what it should be in what they all express as being the most exceptional country in the world? How can we square that circle?
Well, the answer that the conservatives, I believe, would give you is that, well, everybody has the ability to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, which, of course, in this country, we all know is not true. You know, you have, for instance, people that have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in college debt who are honestly trying to get an education good enough to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and all of a sudden they're into debt, owing more than I paid for my house decades.
So stay on the line. We've got to take a brief break here. Stay on the line. We'll talk when we come back.